Okay,
Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Good evening, and welcome to the Green Egg Five Rivers Radio Hour. This is one of your hosts, Ariel Montserrat.
And this is Michael Gorman, the other one.
Yeah, that other one, yeah.
I get called that a lot.
our guest this evening, we have a very special guest, and her name is Karen Tate. She's written several books. Karen is an independent scholar, speaker, radio show host, published author, sacred tour leader, and social justice activist. And her work for three decades has been inspired by her interest and passion for travel, comparative religions, ancient cultures, women's history, and the resurging interest in the rise of the feminine consciousness. Her work combines feminism, spirituality, and uplifting women, all of which are highlighted in her projects. Having discovered the feminine face of God and what that means for women, men, and the species of Mother Earth, Karen became an emissary of the sacred feminine, combining spirituality, feminism, and women's empowerment to offer the world a real alternative to the domination and oppression of patriarchy, the rule of men, and the authoritarian father. Her work has taken the form of tours to sacred sites of goddess around the world, teaching, giving workshops and messages from the pulpit, writing books, and she's the host of her own radio show, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, for the last 8 years discussing issues of sex, power, politics, and religion. She is interviewed regularly by the media and consults on issues related to women's issues and spirituality. Karen has been married to husband Roy, who she describes as the wind beneath her wings, for the last 30 years, and she credits him for his love and support behind the scenes, enabling her to be so active in all phases of her work. So welcome to our show, Karen.
Oh, thank you so much for having me again.
Now, you've got a new book coming out this fall, and would you like to tell us about that?
Well, actually, two books coming out this year.
Okay.
One is just out this month. You were able to special order it for the last few months, but it's finally actually reaching people the month of March. That one is Goddess Calling, Inspirational Messages and Meditations of Sacred Feminine Liberation Theology, which I believe speaks to the idea that sacred feminine ideals really are the ideals that set us free, give us a template for a more sustainable future. And in the fall, I will have an anthology out that I've edited, and I'm excited about that because it's based on my radio show, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, because for the last 8 or 9 years I've been on the air, I've been able to speak to incredible people, not just in the pagan community, but progressive Christians and, people like Noam Chomsky, Vandana Shiva, Father Roy Bourgeois, Rhian Eisler, just an incredible host of people that really we have so much in common with. We're really all allies by our ideals, and I think I get a chance to show that on Voices of the Sacred Feminine. You know, there's such a big umbrella of people out there that believe in the same things as we do and think that they're important. So I've gotten either the transcripts from our radio show or essays that they've written related to our interview, and they're coming out in a book in the fall called Voices of the Sacred Feminine, Conversations to Reshape the World. And, I'm excited. I'm excited. It's been last year was a prolific year.
That's exciting. It's always nice to hear of a writer that's doing well. That's
Well, you know, I think even the magical aspect of it was very interesting, because it was probably December of 2012, January of 2013. This is the truth. I was sitting in front of my altar doing a manifestation ritual. And, because I felt like I didn't know what the year 2013 was supposed to be about for me. Yeah, I was still going to keep doing my radio show, but, you know, I'm used to having 12 plates spinning in the air all the time. How was I going to spend that other time besides radio show time? And so I'm doing a manifestation ritual, and I'm literally saying, you know, Goddess, give me some sort of a sign. You know, what is my path supposed to be for 2013? Well, I wasn't even finished doing the ritual when the phone rang. Now, I was at a place where no one really had the phone number, and the phone rings, and there's a friend on the phone who never calls me, hardly, ever, ever, ever. And I didn't even know he had the phone number. And my husband calls me to the phone and says, you know, my friend is on the line. Could I, you know, be interrupted? And I said, sure, for him, anytime. And so I get on the phone, and he starts talking to me about he thought his publisher would like me to write a book. And that's what was so funny. You know, he was talking to me about writing a book on sacred sites of Goddess in Turkey. And that, although that didn't come in, you know, that didn't manifest for one reason or another, it felt like it was very clear to me that I was being shown a sign that 2013 was supposed to be about writing a book. So, you know, I sat down and thought, well, what could that book be about? And I realized I had so much information, you know, right there just waiting to be compiled that that's all I really had to do, because I had been given messages, if you want to call them messages, sermons from the pulpit. I hate that word because it sounds so Christian, but people get what I'm talking about. You know, at Sacred Sundays, at Unitarian churches, I'd be invited to guest minister, and I'd have to give a talk, right? And so I had a bunch of these, and I thought, well, I'll turn those into a book so that people can use them for inspiration or to lead their own service. Because they sort of gently followed the wheel of the year, you know, or holidays on most people's calendars. And then yeah. I had all of the interviews from, you know, 8 years of radio shows with incredible people. And I thought, why let those go to waste? Just sit in the archives. Let's turn those into a book. And as soon as I suggested them to the publisher, it was O Books at the time, John Hunt, O Books. They had published my second book, Walking an Ancient Path. As soon as I told them about the books, they said, yes, we want to publish them. So, you know, it was just incredible how, you know, the prayer is put out there and the universe answers.
And
so
I
just thought I'd share that whole magic.
That's pretty cool. I'm a poet, so I don't know if I get more ambiguous messages from the deities or if I just, like, multi-layer interpret them automatically. But it sounds like your message was pretty unambiguous. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it worked out. What can I say? Sometimes I can see the breadcrumbs, and other times I'm totally blind.
You know, it's interesting, Karen, as I was listening to your story, one of the things that happened in that time period was January 1st, there was a full moon. I forget what it was in, but it was a full moon. And there were also a full lunar eclipse and other astrological configurations going on. And what it signified was the return of the feminine, the return of feminine values. And I think that's interesting synchronicity that this story that you just told happened right about that same time.
Yeah, most definitely. I didn't realize that. Yeah, that just adds that much more, you know, meaning to the story, I think. Thank you.
Yeah, well, there's another thing happening, too, that just happened. Just this past full moon on March 21st, spring equinox, it was a full moon in Aries. Aries is the initiator of the zodiac. They get things started. They usually don't finish them, but they get things started anyway. And I can say that. I'm an Aries rising. I struggle with that. But anyway. It was, there was another configuration of planets, and the upshot of which is sort of a portal opening up for the return of the goddess. And the goddess is Sedna, And you mentioned that in your book, because you sent me a copy of the book that's just out now, and I was reading it, and within 24 hours, I found this article about astrology, and it mentions Sedna in this configuration. And Sedna,
wow,
for our listeners, well, you should probably tell, you probably know more about Sedna than I do. One of the things in the configuration is the return of environmental concern, you know?
Yes.
And Sedna figures very big in this.
Yes, she does. Look, you know, we all can interpret our goddesses, you know, we maybe don't all interpret them the same way, whether we're talking about our goddess or the myths, but how I understand Sedna, how I think she is very useful to us today, and it's another example of how goddess spirituality really does point the way with so many different ideals, you know, even beyond environmentalism. But yes, Sedna was an Inuit goddess, and the Inuits were the people that live around the icy waters, Newfoundland, I think even like Alaska, you know, the Canadian waters there. And you know, she has different myths, but basically, you know, and there's a whole long story, but what's important for the environmentalism aspect of it is she's sort of the gatekeeper. You know, her domain is the waters beneath the sea, and she controls the sea creatures. So why is that important? Well, the Inuits, the Alaskans, those sorts of people, they rely on the sea creatures for everything. You know, not just their food, but they use their skins, they use their teeth. You know, they use the entire animal to sustain themselves. And she's sort of the gatekeeper because she tells humanity, she says, look, I'll let you, you know, avail yourselves of the sea creatures. You know, we have to, you know, live together. We depend on one another. But if you are greedy, if you exploit, if you take more than you need, then I'm cutting you off. You know, I'm not going to let you exploit the creatures of the sea because you're greedy. So she sort of keeps that balance, you know. And I think that points to, you know, how our, you know, our goddess myths, you know, here's an environmental myth that teaches us not just about greed, but environmentalism. And, you know, I just think that is so important when you can turn on the news and, you know, hear the Gulf is being poisoned again. You have these, I think it's North Carolina, the rivers are being poisoned with coal ash. You know, they're about to start drilling in the Arctic. I mean, are we insane? I mean, are we insane? What are we going to do when fracking has poisoned all the water and, you know, coal ash has poisoned all the water? I mean, seriously, what are we going to do? And is anybody thinking about that? You know, capitalism and patriarchy is so short-sighted. And it makes me mad.
You know, I'm actually, with all of the bad news that we keep getting, because of my study of the early cultures, I end up feeling really positive about where we're going. I always joke with people, if there's one thing you can count on with the human population, it's a sense of self-preservation. And if we don't get enlightened about our relationship with the land, we're simply not going to survive anymore as a species on the planet. But I also see a lot of movement. I just went to a concert a couple nights ago and talked to Mary Youngblood, she's a multiple Emmy winner as a Native American flutist. And as we were partying, I hugged her and I said, you know, the old ways are on the verge of coming back. She says, yes, I know. And I keep hearing that from elders and communities all over the place.
I'm sorry, say that again. What's on the verge of coming back?
The old ways.
The old ways, okay.
Wisdom, taking the wisdom from the land, having a balanced relationship with the land, walking gently on the planet. You know, and there's actually a few things that I'd be interested in your take on this that also give me a lot of hope. There's been amazing progress in gay rights in the last year or so.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things that I've looked at in my own research is that whenever you have a culture where there is a goddess, you don't have homophobia, to the point where I pretty much consider homophobia a brand of misogyny. Because the only reason that gay men are put down by a culture is because they're presenting themselves in a feminine way, which is like, you know, the absolute worst thing that a man can do in a patriarchal culture is honor the feminine.
Right.
Same reason why there's less discrimination against lesbians. It's guys that are supposedly betraying their gender. So the fact that our culture is making some headway in that is tangential, but I think directly related to the resurgence of the honoring of the divine feminine.
Well, you know, I hope you're right. You know, maybe on some unconscious level that is happening. And it's interesting. I think we are making, right, and necessarily so, you know, I'm so glad we're making progress on gay rights and we're starting to, you know, even though some people have to be force-fed tolerance. And
I almost laughed when you said maybe it's on an unconscious level. I think most of the changes that happen in our culture are on the unconscious level for the vast majority.
But you look at what Christian missionaries are doing in places like Uganda, you know, where you can be thrown in jail for being gay or for not turning in your friend or family member who's gay. Yeah, that's really pretty scary. But, yeah, we have made great progress here. Every day, you know, I turn on Rachel Maddow, it seems like another state is approving, you know, gay marriage. And I think that's wonderful. But I just wish we could somehow transfer that to women's equality, you know. Just the other night, former President Jimmy Carter was on David Letterman, and he's got a new book out called A Call to Action. And he made the very important point that, which really not talked about across the globe, is the fact that women have been discriminated against and exploited, and we're not even talking about it. You know, in fact, here in the United States, we've been going backwards with these crazy white, you know, right-wing Republicans who don't even want women, you know, to have access to contraception and certainly not, you know, abortion. And it's a little mind-boggling, you know, when you think about it.
I think it goes even beyond that, Karen, though, because, you know, when you read about the laws that they're trying to get passed, like even right now, where women, there's a case in, I think it's Alabama, women who have a miscarriage are going to be convicted of murder unless they can prove that it really was a miscarriage.
And you know,
so that's just boxing a woman in. I mean, there's just no way that she could win.
Yeah, and I think what makes me crazy about this too is, I mean, some people say, well, you know, this is patriarchy in its last gasps, you know, rearing its ugly head. But what really makes me afraid is, you know, you have people like the Koch brothers pouring all of this money into the midterm elections. We already have, I think, 30 or more of our states that are controlled by Republicans. If the Senate somehow turns and goes Republican, you know, we're in trouble, you know? And
yeah.
I just wonder if what's happening is it's going to have to get much worse before people wake up and realize that they can't vote for Republicans. You know,
yeah.
You have Fox News every day, day in and day out, doing this fear-mongering stuff, you know, promoting the Republican agenda. I mean, you actually have Republican women coming on television doing ads saying Republican women aren't worried about minimum wage. They're not worried about equal pay. They're too busy. What? Duh. You know,
I mean,
talk about women complicit in their own oppression. You know, I just really worry about all of this because I'm afraid that we're going to go backwards a lot, you know, more because of all the voter suppression before we can actually start moving forward again. And I don't mean to be pessimistic.
One of the difficult things that we face is seeing a lot of this stuff clearly and not falling into creating fear ourselves, because I think once we fall prey to the fear, then the system's won, because that's how they control people.
Yeah, fear and hate.
And
hate. There's a lot of hate.
Just one of the reasons, despite from being, you know, kind of a Pollyanna, I look for the positive signs of the stuff that's going, because the last thing I want to do is to buy into the fear and say, oh God, it's going to be terrible, because I don't think it is. I think the gods and goddesses are right on track. And you know, getting back to the thing about gay rights being attached to women's rights, I just wanted to unambiguously say to anybody who's gay that's listening out there that if for no other reason than enlightened self-interest, if you're not a feminist, you're foolish. You're a fool, because it's in the acceptance and the honoring of women that we're going to find our place secure in the culture.
Well,
everybody's a little bit different.
And it's also about honoring the so-called, what are thought of as feminine qualities. And it's not just that, it's not that only women have these qualities. I mean, I happen to be married to a man who has a strong streak of feminine, and I love that about him. I mean, he's the one that goes out and picks the flowers and comes in and arranges them, you know. He's also got a hell of a lot of masculine energy, you know. And to me, that's balanced. And I think that's what, it's like it frees men up to explore their more feminine, creative, more compassionate, softer side. And I think that's liberating for a lot of men.
Yeah.
And actually frees them to be more fully themselves. I have a straight son, and I've watched him, you know, even being raised in a very feminist household, having to struggle against what the entire rest of the culture is telling him he's supposed to be as a male, and he feels boxed in by it, you know? And you know, basically feminism is a key to health on so many levels in the culture. You know, we cut out half of the impulse in humanity, and we all lose.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think men always understand. At least I find that when I go out and give talks, you know, men don't really understand how they might also have been damaged by patriarchy. You know, we just accept what's out there as normal. But
right, and it's almost insidious that they're told, see, you're on top, and inside they're going, well, feel very much on top. I guess it must be if they're telling me I am. So we're, you know, they're consciously told to avoid really looking at what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, it's a disconnect from your emotions. You know, just man up.
Yeah. God, I was told that by my military father so many times, and I'd usually cry when he said that.
Aww.
It was a real frustration for him.
Well, let's think about this a little bit. You know, I really wish, you know, we could get a message out to the pagan community to really start to stand in solidarity. You know, stand in solidarity for women's issues, for the earth, for gay issues, for immigrant issues, for worker issues. Because, you know, if we stopped having these wedge issues between us, whether it's, you know, women, you know, with their witch wars and their gossip, you know, fighting with other women, or it's, you know, between traditions, oh, my tradition is better than your tradition, or you're a real priestess and you're not a real priestess, or whatever it is. I mean, there's so many wedge issues that can divide us out there. You know, we do ritual differently. We honor goddess differently. We see goddess differently. You know, just put all of that aside, because in the end, we really do have so many more concerns in common than our differences. And
in a sense, we don't really need to set them aside, because if we take the cue from our ancestors who got their wisdom from nature, you know, you look at a forest. If you have one kind of tree in a forest, it's doomed. You know, so it's not that the differences aren't important. The differences are essential for the health of a population. You know, any ninth grade biology student can tell you if you lower the gene pool, you damage the species. So we should be, you know, even in just a purely scientific sense, that the more differences we have, the healthier we're all going to be, and we can learn from each other with our differences.
True. I mean, I think goddess, in, you know, by her many faces across continents and cultures, is a metaphor for diversity. But by put them aside, I meant, you know, let's not let those be the things that divide us. You know, let's embrace them. Let's revel in them. You know, who wants to eat white bread all the time? I'd rather eat gumbo, you know, which is just this delicious mixture of all sorts of things thrown together. But, you know, I think so often, I think paganism holds the answer, you know, to move us forward, to save ourselves. And if but I don't know about you, but, you know, I run into it all the time. You know, we're so busy fighting these little battles on our home turfs that, you know, we're not coming together in solidarity with, you know, with gays, with workers, with immigrants, with,
The irony is it's the culture that's oppressed us, that taught us to constantly be at war with each other, because then it doesn't have to do anything. We battle each other, and then it just sits back and takes all the money and the power.
Yeah,
and
divide
so
and conquer.
in fighting each other, we're doing exactly what the patriarchal system wants us to do. So we're lost from the beginning. And I think, you know, one of the things that is so important about pagan scholarship is letting people know, you know, there's thousands of years of precedent of cultures that worked, that weren't more like this, that lived sustainably on the land in our own heritage. And we've just been lied to and told that it's not there. And if we can direct them to see what their true history is, you know, it could blow the lid off this.
I know. I know the potential is just right there, and I can't help but think we're gonna reach that tipping point. But you know, I think we have to be tenacious and try to be role models and try to get everybody thinking like we're talking about today.
Well,
and,
you know, there's something happening right now as we speak that's really major, and talk about blow the lid off. All right, I just discovered a couple days ago while I was searching around on the internet for something. There are any number of reliable sources reporting that I'm not going to get the name right, but it's ITTCS, International Trial something or other court, and it's a people's court, okay? They have, they're having a trial over the Pope, this current Pope, Pope Francis, for child trafficking, and he was... this was known before he even became Pope. But apparently there's like this, and I always thought satanic ritual abuse didn't exist because we were told, oh, well, by the police, you know, we looked into it and there's nothing to it. Yet you hear these little things from various people on the Internet. I never knew whether to believe it. But there is a priest who is Canadian who was expelled from the church because he was becoming too vocal, protesting about the Catholic Church's abuse of sexual abuse of children, and he's all over this, and he's going to be testifying, and they now have three witnesses witnessing that very high-up people, including Pope Benedict, were involved in child ritual sacrifice. They saw it. They saw it. And this is, of course, you will never read about this in mainstream. Can you imagine how upset Catholics and just Christians in general would be about this? And they would be screaming, but you're persecuting us again, you know.
Well, I know I'm going to sound conspiracy theory-esque, but, you know, I found it really funny the way Benedict stepped down. You know, it felt like to me there was something fishy there. I didn't buy the help.
In modern times at all, you know.
Let me tell you what happened. This is what Kevin Annette says. It's become very clear to him that Benedict resigned because the court was coming after him, and he got the hell out of there quickly. And the Pope, what he says is, when the media do interviews at the Vatican, it became real clear to him that Pope Francis is just a figurehead. Pope Benedict is actually running things. Pope Benedict is still living in the Vatican, which, by the way, he has diplomatic immunity as long as he stays in the Vatican. And Pope Francis lives in a convent somewhere, which is interesting. By his choice, though.
I mean, because he's really into, not living the lavish lifestyle. You know, I think that's why I respect him, because he's actually trying to, get rid of this idea that greed is good and get back to the idea that we should, you know, take care of the least among us.
Well, that's what he's saying, but he was involved in child trafficking when he was in Argentina. He was promised that if he went along with it, that he would then become the top Catholic clergy in all of Argentina, and that's what happened.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, I didn't know that, and I have to say, when it, right off the bat, when I hear that, I'm not saying it's not true, don't get me wrong, but
right.
I have to wonder, is it people that are pissed off with him because he's coming out saying, let the social issues alone, you know, because he got a lot of, you know, he got a lot of Catholics mad because
yeah.
he said, you know, quit on the abortion stuff, quit on the gay stuff, you know, let's be more like Jesus, let's worry about the poor. And that didn't make a lot of people happy.
Oh, I say take everything with a grain of salt. When I read something, I research it over and over and over until I'm satisfied that I got the truth. But I can tell you that I've known for a number of years, because I read all the time, I read a lot of political stuff, and it has been known and documented and documented and documented that the Vatican is involved in child sex slavery, and they run, they're part of the ring.
Well,
bringing that back to the scholarship stuff we've been talking about, I think that's one of the things that is essential for pagan leaders to realize, and very difficult at the same time, is we have to find a balance between teaching people what's going on and empowering people to learn for themselves and to explore and to question. And I mean, I raised my son to be a questioner and a challenger, and he was getting in trouble in school all the time for asking questions, which he found to be a great irony. But it's like a whole other way of thinking that we have to get people doing in order to even be able to put the bigger picture together, because it's purposely disjointed by the powers that be so that we don't know stuff. You know?
Right, and I think we've got a huge opening here to teach people a different way and tell them, hey, you know what, there's a different way to live. Because I think most people in America today are extremely unhappy with the powers that be and what the government is doing and maybe more importantly what they're not doing, you know.
You know, but, Karen, I wanted to ask you, and to see if you've had experience with this. I've recently gone back to community college to study art, and Sacramento is a fairly enlightened town. Time magazine declared it the most diverse city in the country because we don't have a majority. There's more mixed marriages here than any place else. So I'm hoping it's not just here, but at the college, like Ara said, the disillusionment with the system, I'm noticing some of the younger generation are, without really knowing what to call it, they're starting to rediscover the tribal consciousness, the living with the wisdom of the land and just the simple logic of it. And it's making me feel really good. I mean, these kids don't even know why gay is an issue. You know, I bring it up and they're like, oh, cool, well, I'm bi. Like, why are we even talking about it? You know, they don't think about race when they get into relationships. And as an older person going back to college, I get treated like this wise elder. They're asking questions all the time, want to hear my war stories about old protests and stuff. And, you know, these kids are really, really giving me a lot of hope for the future. Have you had similar experience with the younger generation?
Well, not firsthand, to tell you the truth. You know, I don't get on college campuses very much, and I think most of what I can speak to is what I've read. And I've read that the millennials are going to be our savior for the very reason that
I mean, they come
said.
Out of class some days, and there's a spontaneous drum circle in the quad at City College. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Whoa.
Well, and also, too, they were a lot of the people that were in the Occupy movement. So they want government to work for them instead of government to work for the corporations. So they have more of a socialist bent as well.
You've also watched their parents who have put all their faith in the American dream and owning a house and all of the rest of that, and saw it all fall apart during the Great Recession. So they're like, yeah, no, that doesn't work.
Well, you know what I found really interesting, a couple weeks from now, I'm interviewing a woman on my show who has been studying trends over in Japan. And there things are happening over there that are quite interesting, too, which sort of ties into what we're talking about, because maybe this is more global than we think. It came up about the herbivore man. And because Japan's economy has been, you know, in the pits just like ours, this idea of, you know, amassing great wealth is not really a dream over there anymore. So people have had to reassess. And it seems like two things are happening to the genders. You know, in some cases, they're sort of going in different directions. The men are no longer on this path to acquire wealth. They're more into following their bliss, maybe not even so much worried about getting married. You know, they're not doing this traditional Japanese thing, you know, because, you know, we remember the, you know, Japanese corporate model. You know, they're under such pressure, you know, there's even a lot of suicide, you know, in their ranks because of the pressure to perform and succeed and all of this stuff. Well, you know, that's sort of, you know, going to the wayside. And simultaneously, women in Japan are starting to become empowered. They're actually even distinguishing sacred sites over in Japan as women's empowerment sites. So I found that really interesting, and you know, I can't wait to delve into it a little bit more to see how this cultural shift, you know, really may affect things. That, you know, we may see it beyond Japan.
You know, I've noticed the same thing happening in Ireland, not as overt a way, but I don't think the Irish ever were Roman Catholic. They kept Celtic Christianity all the way through. But I had a long conversation with the Brigidine nuns when we asked to see the eternal light of Bridget that they had relit in defiance of Rome. And the entire time, myself and the tour group I led were talking about the goddess Bridget, and she was talking about Saint Bridget. And she, you know, it was very clear that it didn't matter a whit to her what you call Bridget. Mm-hmm. Bridget is Bridget. And so what I'm seeing over there is not so much a sea shift as those underground attitudes are finally coming forth again and not feeling the oppression of either the British authorities or the Catholic authorities, and they're starting to express that more balanced view from their ancient history. And it's really, really exciting to see. And interesting, at the same time, speaking of my theory, the openness of the gay community has just exploded over there. And, you know, and they're realizing that these strict male and female roles just simply don't work. And the people that have been teaching that all these years were wrong, you know.
Right. Yeah, I mean, people really should be free to be their authentic selves and forget about all of this fitness into these little boxes, you know, because it makes other people more comfortable. But I'm glad to hear that the Soulless Breed are still at it and, you know, tenaciously, you know, keeping
that flame
alive.
They've been so adamant about keeping that flame alive that, you know, when they first relit it, they got a priest to go along with them to defy Rome to light the thing. And now the town is so proud of it. And they know it's generally Irish Catholics or Celtic pagans that, you know, come there wanting to see it. The town has now built a shrine in the middle of the town square to house Bridget's flame.
Wow.
All just stuff that the Catholic Church didn't want them to do, but they're just kind of ignoring it. And
good. Well, speaking
and
of ignoring...
And I even had the nun at the end of the conversation. She asked if we'd been to Bridget's Well, and I told her yes. And she says, isn't it lovely with the walkways and the statue of St. Bridget? I said, yes, because, you know, that's not the ancient well. And I'm like, really? Well, we only like to tell the location of the ancient well to those who we know truly love St. Bridget. Then she proceeded to tell us Celtic pagans where the old well was, so that we could go.
Oh, you lucky dog! I didn't get that.
It was amazing. It was amazing. Of course, I got the Irish blarney and charm, so I talked to an Irish person, and I'm instantly family. So I took full advantage of that over there.
You're as Irish as they come, Michael.
Yes,
and I say
yes.
That as an Irish person myself, and married to another guy who's as Irish as they come. You're Irish, no doubt about it.
Well, you know, talk about doing things that just sort of fly in the face of the, you know, organized institution that is the church. I mean, let's not forget about woman priests. You know, for some of your listeners who might not know, you know, the women who become ordained offshore in a boat somewhere, and then carry on, you know, as women priests. I've interviewed one on my radio show, and I have to admit, I didn't mean to throw her a curveball, but I said, look, if you're going to go this far, why do you call yourself a priest? Why don't you just call yourself a priestess? You know, and, well, she thought that was a little bit too much. She was afraid, you know, it was enough that they were, you know, sort of going as far as they did to call herself, you know, call themselves a priestess might have been too much even for their, you know, their congregation. But, you know, I think we see everywhere that, you know, people are finding the courage to stand up to authority, whether it be the, the Egypt Spring or, you know, any of these, you know, these countries that are, or, you know, I mean, Ukraine, you know, people are trying to set their own, you know, set their own future rather than being manipulated by, you know, by their governments that don't represent them, you know.
Right. Well, and we have.
I actually take great pride in that because, you know, one of the things I've learned is that was one of the avenues of migration of the Celts coming into Europe was down the Danube River Valley and through the Ukraine. It's like, yeah. So, and they apparently were very, you know, very compatible with the people that there. So they sort of have that inbred revolutionary attitude that that the Celts tend to have as well.
Well, I keep wondering, when are Americans going to get out in the street? I mean, does it have to get so much worse? I mean, are enough people not uncomfortable enough that we, I mean, why are not millions of us in the street? Have we not endured enough between, you know, the bankers collapse in the economy and, you know, the oil companies polluting
and here
GMOs?
We've had like 14 what I call executions by cop out on the street of mentally handicapped people and people of color, and nobody is ever held accountable because they're always within department. I mean, serious police state stuff, and people have just, they've been so brainwashed. It's one of the things that I'm passionate about talking about the old tribal attitudes because, you know, we've been brainwashed by things like there's two sides to every story. You know, we just believe it because we've heard it all our lives, and it's like, well, we're in a multidimensional world. There's not two sides to anything. You know, and yet we believe it because, yep, that's what they told me. And it's going to take those of us, I guess, that I see a little bit more getting a little more obnoxious and and loud and getting out there. It's like, pay attention, everybody. Because once people start really looking at the land, then the system's not going to be able to sustain itself. It looks insane compared to the way the natural landscape works.
Well, and I think what, you know, people have to open up their eyes to see how money is you know, controlling things. I mean, whether it be the Mormon Church that sunk all of that money into California that, you know, made it so that, you know, California didn't have gay marriage, or, I mean, all they have to do is run commercials that say something is going to lose jobs. And that's how, you know, food labeling didn't get passed here in California. You know, I don't know.
The reality is, what is money but a social contract? If we all decide tomorrow that piece of paper means nothing, it'd be like, you know, the Confederate money after the war. It's like it only means something because we give it meaning, and yet we allow people to oppress us with something that only exists in our heads. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah. It's just unfathomable to me that people. I mean, granted, look, we all need jobs, you know, but do we not care if, you know, what we're eating? Because, I mean, it's only going to affect us down the road when we end up with cancer or something, you know. You would think something as basic as what we eat would be of concern to people.
I have a good friend who just lost a son, an adult son, to asthma because he didn't have health insurance yet. And, I mean, I look at that and go, why is not everybody racing to the Capitol and say, excuse me?
Okay, there's a couple things here I'd like to just interject. One is they put fluoride in our water. Fluoride is what Hitler used in the Nazi concentration camps to keep everybody calm. And the other thing is most Americans are busy juggling like two or three different, you know, jobs in order to put food on the table and, you know, take care of their kids. And they're exhausted between taking care of their kids.
While at the same time they're believing... Well, at the very same time, they're believing the myth that people that are rich got there by working really hard. No, it's the poor people that are working
yes.
for jobs. I mean, if you just open your eyes and look, it's it's truly insane what we're taught to believe, but we've heard it so many times, and we're so tired of working and so busy just trying to put food on the table that we don't have time to think. I mean, if there's one thing you got to say about the patriarchy, it is brilliant in its pattern of sustaining itself. I mean,
yeah, and it's propaganda. Well, you know what I think part of the problem is?
The fear, the myths.
Yeah, and I think part of the problem is we don't know what we would replace it with, you know, because,
yeah.
You know, even I think that's a big part of this. It's not like, you know, we have a ballot initiative. Do you want to continue with patriarchy or do you want B instead? You know, this is the only thing most people know or can imagine.
Well, that's why I say we have an opportunity right here. We've got an opening because people are sick of this paradigm, and more people every day are getting sicker of this paradigm, and that's when we can jump in and say, hey, have we got a paradigm for you, you know?
Yeah, not only do we have a paradigm, but it's got a history of thousands of years. It's in our own heritage.
It worked.
You know, with the tribal peoples, it worked. And the Celts were not, you know, running around in animal skins. They were the scientists and philosophers of their time. The Greeks did student exchanges with the Druids. And, you know, it's a culture that did everything that we're trying to accomplish in social justice. And it lasted, you know, four, five, six times as long as anything in the Roman system has ever lasted. You know, and we just need to get the word out there, which is why I'm doing the same thing you are, Karen. The message that came through to me is like, you could do all this other stuff, but the writing has got to come first.
Yep, the pen is mightier than the sword. We
know
this.
Yes.
Because what survives, you know, we've had wars all throughout, well, not all throughout history, but in the last 12,000 years of history, we've had a whole lot of things happen, but what survives? The writing. And we've even got stuff from Aristotle from, over 2,000 years ago.
Thanks to my Irish ancestors, by the way. If it weren't for the, I don't know if you've seen the book, How the Irish Saved Civilization, but if it hadn't been for the Druids seeing the libraries burning and stashing everything they could find in the Irish libraries, we wouldn't know any of that.
Yeah, and I've read that, like, in the 800s, when the rest of Europe was in the Dark Ages, Ireland was, like, in the glory of its literature and education and...
Which takes us back to the conversation we were having before we went on the air, that what, you know, to hold on to our books and don't rely on everything being electronically available, because what if that's all taken away one day?
Well, I think that's why...
Karen, I want to take advantage of interviewing you, Karen, by saying something that's been kind of the bane of my existence, is that Druidry is not a guy thing. You know, if you look back at the old lore, there's more female druids mentioned in the lore than guys, and I always get that. But, oh, you're a druid, that's a guy thing. Like, no!
Well, no, I mean, how could it be?
I'll watch what happens.
I don't think I thought that. I mean, I know you're saying it, and I don't...
Totally taking advantage of interviewing you. I know that you don't believe that, but I just figure, I'm on the air, I'm with Karen, who's a feminist. I want to throw that out there because I'm tired of people coming in and saying it.
Well,
so,
you know,
that
and that brings...
a selfish comment on my part.
That brings up something, just real quickly, is that, you know, even in pagandom, okay, as when we were talking with Janet and Gavin Bone a couple weeks ago, and Janet was like, you know, Doreen Valiente spoke seven different languages, was constantly doing research on the old ways and witchcraft and pagandom, and it's really she was the architect of modern witchcraft, not Gerald Gardner, who made up a whole lot of it. And but doesn't that just figure, though, that the guy gets credit and the woman doesn't, you know? As usual.
Although, we have Gerald Gardner to thank for, you know, turning in his thesis for a new one, because had he not released Dorian in his ignorance, she would probably never have been the power that she was, and I, for one, am very thankful that she was.
Going back to what you said, Ariel, you know, I mean, we go through this, we talk about this every time it's Women's History Month, which March is, and, you know, we find that, you know, women, there's a dearth of information out there on women. You know, men dominate the written word, and part of it, I think, had to do with the fact that, you know, men had more money, they had more leisure time to be able to write. You know, women were stuck home, you know, taking care of the house, taking care of the kids. You even find that women had to write under the name of a man to have any credibility, because if a woman wrote it, well, you know, it wasn't taken as anything important or worthwhile.
Well, okay, Beatrix Potter had to have her, she happened to have a friend who was male who was in love with her, and he was head of a publishing house, and he offered to publish her books under, I think it was his name, but some, you know, a man's name anyway, because women weren't allowed to have their own bank accounts.
Yeah.
And so she had to be beholden to him. Fortunately, he loved her completely, was thoroughly behind her work, and, you know, she ended up owning 16 farms in England. But that was...
You know, I'm amazed at how many historians I talk to, like at the colleges, have never heard of Lady Gregory, who was the woman responsible for starting to translate all of those old Gaelic manuscripts in the Irish libraries that, you know, basically she turned over to the intellectuals, founded the Abbey Theatre, created the Irish rebellion against England in the Revolution. You know, she was the only one that, it was against the law to translate, and she was one of the wealthy Scots Irish who loved the Irish more than she loved England. And this woman single-handedly made it possible to bring back all of that information about ancient Europe that we didn't have.
Well, I just interviewed a woman on my radio show a couple weeks ago talking about the 13th century women's movement of the Beguines, B-E-G-U-I-N-E-S.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And, you know, I think they might predate Hildegard von Bingen, I'm not sure, and, the Norwich one, I forget her name now.
Juliana.
Yeah, but, you know, why do we not hear about these women? You know, some of them ended up getting burned at the stake, but, they led thriving communities, when it was said that, women were incapable, or that, you know, men had to be leaders of the church. They were the leaders of religion in their communities. And you know what? They did just fine.
And even political leadership. The only two Celtic generals who ever defeated the Romans, one was a guy and one was Queen Boadicea, the woman. You know, she was one of the greatest generals in all of Celtic history.
We are still doing a number on ourselves, not us, but in other communities. You know, we still, sort of get locked into the myth, to the illusion. I remember when Hillary and President Obama were, you know, still battling out to see who was going to be the Democratic nominee for president, and you would go to women and ask them, well, what do you think? Are you going to vote for Hillary? You had women who were still saying stuff like, well, no, I don't think I'm going to vote for Hillary because women are too emotional. I mean,
that drives me nuts. The people that buy into or actually help with their own oppression. It's just, you know, it's like when I meet a gay person that's racist, I just want to slap them. Shut their own pacifist. So I can't. Well, I can do it verbally, but it's like, what is wrong with you? You may as well be stabbing yourself in the back.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing that, you know, the people that really just don't connect the dots, that, one person's oppression is, you know, that oppressor is probably oppressing them too.
Exactly.
Yeah. So often the oppressed become the oppressor.
That too, yeah, most definitely.
One of the things I'm proud of with my son growing up is he did just the opposite of buying into the stereotypes. He sort of used them. I asked him once if he was ever discriminated against or kids teased him because he had a gay dad. And he goes, well, not by anybody I care about, Dad. In fact, I try to tell people I have a gay dad as soon as I meet him. I said, really, why? He goes, well, because I figure that the homophobic kids are probably also the racist kids and the misogynist kids. So I end up with the coolest friends in school. I said, so you're using me? He goes, oh, yeah, big time.
Well, you know, at least that way he finds out right away, you know, who he wants to sit at the lunch table with and who he doesn't.
Exactly. And the fact that he didn't want to be around misogynists, but, you know, so if you got a way to weed them out of your friendship circle, go for it. And, his friends were amazing. Yeah, the bottom line is, and we've heard it a million times, but how many of us really believe it, that oppression against any group of people is damaging to every person? You know, we can't live free if we don't let everybody live free.
Well, I think Martin Luther King Jr. said it best, none are free until all are free.
Yeah.
Period, end of story. That's really true, because unless we're all protecting everybody's rights, it's always going to be some group that society picks on, whether it's gays, blacks, women, you know, whatever.
Well, you know, that makes me think of that saying that they had after World War II, or maybe it was during World War II. I always forget the author's name, but it went something like, you know, they came for the labor unionists, but I wasn't one. You know,
yes.
They came for this one and they came for that one, but I wasn't one, so basically I didn't do anything. And then when they finally came for me, there was nobody left to stand with
nobody
me.
Left.
Yeah,
it was actually a Christian minister who wrote that. I can't remember his name, but amazing piece
of
writing.
The name of the guy who wrote They Came For Me and the, you know, Tom usually knows.
No fair, you have your advisor next to you.
Yes, I have my advisor.
Your historic advisor.
Yeah. He's
having
a brain fart.
Speaking of King, even he had to deal with it because J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI threatened to blow the lid off the civil rights movement by revealing that Bayard Rustin, his best friend and mentor, was gay. And King was ready to go out in the streets and say, no, you know, you helped start this movement. You can't leave it. But Bayard, you know, because he said, well, you don't understand, Martin, even the people that are working with us won't accept it if I'm there. And he bowed out of his own movement.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, because I think the black community has been a little bit slower to accept gays in their ranks.
Yeah, sadly, the ones that are mostly associated with conservative churches, the black community and the Hispanic community. I've talked to so many guys that said it's like impossible to come out there.
Yeah.
You lose the entire extended family, which is the center of your life.
Well,
yeah.
this football player who has come out as being gay, is he white or black?
I think he's white.
That reminds me, I want to get a copy. I've never bought a football T-shirt in my life, but I want to get the T-shirt that's selling that has his number on it.
Oh, cool.
Did you know the number that he chose on his jersey is the number of the year when Matthew Shepard was killed.
Hmm.
That's interesting.
Well, listen, we're getting towards the end of the show here, and before time gets away from us, I want to make sure, Karen, that everybody has your website and, again, the name of your book and where they can find it and purchase it and all of that kind of info.
Oh, Ariel, thank you so much. Well, you know, the easiest place is to go to my website, which is my name, KarenTate.com. Once you get there, you go to the Goddess Store page. You can scroll down and you can buy the book directly from me if you want it signed, or you can get it from all the regular online booksellers. However, you know, if you don't want to support a multinational corporation like Amazon, you know, get it from me or get it from your local bookseller. Try to help keep the local booksellers in business. You know, if for just a minute I could just tout the film Femme, Women Healing the World.
Yes.
It was produced by Wonderland Entertainment and Sharon Stone, the actress, was one of the executive producers. You know, this is really a documentary that you can go to, find it online, Femme the Movie, F-E-M-M-E, the movie. You can either stream it for like $4.99, you can download it. Pretty soon you're going to be able to buy physical copies of it. It's so important. You know, the documentarian was courageous enough to go to the very beginning. In fact, I'm lucky enough to be in it. I sort of carry the message of the sacred feminine is about the we and the us, not the I and the me, and that there were goddesses 30,000 years ago and that whole thing. And they talk about in this, you know, how everything's become turned on its head and what we have to do to change it. So it doesn't just bitch.
Awesome.
You know, it offers solutions. It offers a solution
awesome.
Of partnership. And I would just say, please, you know, we can't get the word out enough. This is such an important documentary. And, you know, I would just encourage people to get it for themselves, buy it as gifts, use it as like book circle, you know, invite your friends over, have a movie night, look at it, talk about it, dialogue about it. So I just wanted to put that out there because I don't think enough people have had a chance to hear about it because you know why? The movie distribution is controlled by men. They didn't
yep.
even want to look at the film, so it couldn't
right.
get widespread distribution. So we're having to do grassroots distribution. So
Thank
please
you so much
send the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're
the
in
the place where I live.
Too,
we've dubbed Five Rivers House, and we do house concerts and movie nights. I will definitely put that on our list for one.
Thank
of
you,
movies.
And you know what? You can find it on my website too. On the very first page, the index page, when it first comes
up,
if you scroll down just a little bit, you can find the links right there. You can even download it right there from my site.
Excellent.
Michael and our listeners, Karen is actually in this film, too. You were interviewed, were you?
Yes. I felt so lucky. That was another one of the magical things that happened in 2013. Right after my books got approved by the publisher, I got the opportunity to be interviewed for the film. And I have just a small little part because there are dozens of women interviewed in this. You know, we all just have little parts. But I feel really good about being in it because I got to talk about the sacred feminine. And for me, you know, that's like my mission. So I just feel really good that I was the one to tell the world about the goddess in this film.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That is so awesome. Thank you
yeah,
for
really,
that.
Yeah, really, really. Well, that's our show for tonight, folks. We hope you enjoyed it, and we hope you join us next week. We just today had a cancellation for our guest next week, so I'm not sure who we'll have, but we'll have somebody really interesting.
It'll be somebody awesome.
It'll be somebody awesome. And don't forget to check out The Green Egg.
The Green Egg.
This world alone. The world alone. I walk this world alone. I will not For I live under my lady and my Lord. Lord, I live my